namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Narayanam namaskritya dhanam chaiva narottamam devam sarasvatim vyasam tato jaya mudirayat. This morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 7, text number 6. Please repeat this verse after me.
Dharmasya daksha duhitari ajanishta murtyam.
Dharmasya daksha duhitari ajanishta murtyam.
Narayano nara iti svatapa prabhava.
Narayano nara iti svatapa prabhava.
Drishtva mano bhagavato niyaman valopam.
Drishtva mano bhagavato niyaman valopam.
Devyas Tvananga pritana gatitam nasheku.
Devyas tvananga pritana gatitam nasheku.
Aby pán projevil svým osobným způsobem podříkání a pokání, zjevil se v podobě dvojčat, jako Narayan a Nara, v lůně Murti, manželky Dharmy a dcery Dakshi. Vydali se za ním nebeské krásky společnice Amora, aby se ho pokusili přimět porušit jeho sliby, ale skončili neúspěšně, protože viděli, že mnoho stejných krásek, jako jsou oni, vychází z něj samotného, z osobnosti božství. Význam. Pán, který je zdrojem všeho, co může být, je také zdrojem všeho odříkání a pokání. Velké sliby odříkání přijímají mudrcové, aby dosáhli úspěchu v seberealizaci. Lidský život je určen pro takovou tapasu s velkým slibem celibátu, neboli brahmačáry. V přísném životě tapasy není žádné místo pro společnost ženy. A jelikož lidský život je určen pro tapasu, pro seberealizaci, skutečná lidská civilizace, kterou představuje systém Sanatana Dharma, neboli systém škola čtyř kast a čtyř životních řádů, předepisuje přísnou odluku od žen. Třech starých života. Aby se dosáhlo postupného kulturního rozvoje, člověk lidský život může být rozdělen do tří období. Celibát, život v domácnosti, život v ústraně, život v odříkání. Jen od prvního stádia života až do věku 25 let je člověk připravován, může být připravován jako brahmačáry pod vedením pravého duchovního mistra, aby pochopil, že žena je skutečně tím, co váže hmotné existenci. Pokud se někdo chce osvobodit z hmotného odroctví podměněného života, musí se osvobodit od přitažlivosti v podobě ženy. Žena na nežné pohlaví je tím, co okouzluje živé bytosti, a lidská podoba, mužská podoba, zvláště lidské bytosti, je určená pro seberealizaci. Celý svět se točí pod kouzlem ženské přitažlivosti. A jakmile se muž spojí se ženou, okamžitě se stává obětí hmotného otroctví a s pevným uzlem zavázán. Touhy panovat hmotnému světu, opojení falešným smyslem vlastnictví a panování, začínají zvláště tehdy, když se muž spojí se ženou. Přichází touhy vlastnit dům, vlastnit zemi, mít děti, být význačný ve společnosti, mít nějaký cit ke společnosti a místu narození, toužit po majetku. A to vše jsou fata morgány nebo iluzorní sny a zatěžují lidskou bytost, která tak má zábrany vykonávat seberealizaci a dosáhnout konečného skutečného životního cíle. Brahmačáry nebo chlapec od věku pěti let, zvláště ve vyšších kastách, to znamená od rodičů, kteří jsou učenci brahmanové, kteří jsou vládcové, kšatrie, nebo kteří jsou obchodníci a výrobci vajšové, tak tenhle chlapec je připravován do 25 let svého věku péči pravého guruva nebo učitele a s přísným dodržováním disciplíny přichází k porozumění hodnot života a zároveň vystává zvláštní přípravu, jak pro život. Brahmačáry mu je potom dovoleno odejít domů a vstoupit do života v domácnosti tím, že se ožení s hodnou ženou. ale existuje mnoho brahmačárů, kteří nejdou domů, neodcházejí se stát boží domácnosti, ale pokračují v životě jako najštika brahmačáry, bez jakéhokoliv styku se ženami. Přijímají řád sanyas, nebo i odříkavý životní řád, a dobře vědí, že spojení se ženami je zbytečnou zátěží, která brání v seberealizaci. Jelikož pohlavní touha je v jistém životním období velice silná, guru může dovolit brahmačárymu, aby se oženil. A toto povolení dostává ten brahmačáry, který není schopen pokračovat dále jako najštika brahmačáry. A takové rozlišení umí udělat, rozhodnout pravý guru. Program takzvaného rodinného plánování je zapotřebí. Muž v domácnosti, který se združuje se ženou podle příkazů a omezení písem, když prošel důkladnou přípravu stádia brahmačárya, nemůže být hospodářem jako jsou psi a kočky. Takový muž v domácnosti po 50 letech svého věku odejde do ústraní od své ženy a naučí se jako vánaprasta žít bez společnosti ženy. A jakmile je dokonale připravený, tentýž dřívější hospodář se stává sanyasinem a přísně se odděluje od žen, od své bývalé manželky. Tím, že studujeme celé schéma odloučení od ženy, ukazuje se, že žena je překážkou pro seberealizaci. A pán se zjevil jako Náraja, aby učil této zásadě nespolčovat se ženami a přijat mu tohoto životní slib. Polobozí závidí odříkavému životu přísných brahmačárů a občas se snaží přinutit je, aby porušili své sliby tím, že vysílají amorový vojáky. Ale v případě pána to byl pokus neúspěšný, protože nebeské krásky viděli, že pán může svojí mystickou vnitřní silou sám vytvořit bezpočet takových krásek a neměl žádnou potřebu, aby ho přitahovali nějaké jiné zvenčí. Existuje takové výhodné přísloví, že cukráře nikdy nepřitahují sladkosti. Cukrář, který neustále vyrábí sladkosti, nemá žádnou velkou touhu je jíst. A stejně jak pán může svoji energii, vnitřní energii rozkoše, vytvořit bezpočet nebeských krásek a ani trochu nemusí být přitahován falešnými kráskami hmotného stvoření. Lidé, kteří neznají, tak pošetile tvrdí, že když pán Krišna se věnoval své rása líle ve Vrindávaně, nebo když žil se svými 16 000 manželkami ve Dvárace, takže užíval ženy.
Tarmasya Daksha Duhitari Ajinishtamurtyam Narayanu Nara Iti Svatapa Prabhava Drishtvatmano Bhagavato Niyamavalopam Devyastvananga Pratanagatitum Nasheku Mukham Kuroti Bachalam Bhangam Langaya Deganimi Kripadaram Mande Shri Gurundina Taranam. So it is said by the sage Chanakya that one thing is seen in three different ways according to who is seeing.
Chanakya říkal, že jedna věc lze vidět třemi různými způsoby podle toho, kdo se dívá.
So a renunciate, one who has renounced sense gratification, he sees this one thing, this thing in question, as a dead body. And another man, who has not conquered his senses, he sees this same thing as a desirable sense object. And thirdly, a dog sees this same thing as a piece of meat. So what is this one thing? It's a woman. So a woman can be seen in these three ways according to the consciousness. So then, for one whose senses are not conquered, who finds women attractive, then he will be attracted in different ways too, according to his consciousness. As I was explaining last night, everyone who is captivated by Maya is drawn to Maya in three ways, according to the modes of nature. So, a man who is very much conditioned by the mode of ignorance, who is low class, then he is drawn to women simply for sex. So he finds association with very low class women, like prostitute. And then someone who is more influenced by the mode of passion, a middle class man, he's attracted to women by their characteristics of being a good wife, good mother, a good partner in social life. And the man who's more conditioned by the mode of goodness, then what he will look for in a woman is a more high-class qualities like religiosity and intelligence and fine speech, like that. Now in Krishna consciousness, there is actually no consideration of these modes of nature. If one is entering the Grihastha ashram, the only consideration is that the wife should be a devotee of the Lord. Because if husband and wife are both devotees of Krishna, then their relationship also comes under devotional service. Even the sexual relationship, because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Dharma Bhuta Varuteshu Kamo Asmi, that I become the sex. I actually become the sex between those who are following the Bhagavad Dharma, the religious principles of scripture. So in Krishna conscious household life, the sexual relationship is engaged in only for Krishna's purpose. Krishna intends that his devotees, his pure devotees, take birth in this world for the benefit of human society. So, husband and wife who are Krishna conscious, they create the facility for the appearance of the Lord's pure devotees by their sexual relationship.
svědomí Krišny, tak vytvářejí podmínky pro takové oddané vysvětlování životnosti.
So, when the relationship between husband and wife is carried out strictly under Krishna's direction as devotional service, then actually there's no influence of the modes of nature. Srila Prabhupada gives a very nice example in this regard to help us understand the consciousness of pure devotees who are in the household or ashram.
Srila Prabhupada dává pěkný příklad vědomí čistých oddaných, kteří jsou ashramu.
That it is just like a wife who has her husband, but she also has a secret lover. So she does all of her duties for her husband very nicely so that he won't suspect that she's having an illicit affair. But as she's doing her duties to her husband, she's always thinking, when will I see my lover? So in the same way, a pure devotee may be engaged in household affairs. He may be raising children. All of these things he may be doing. But his mind is elsewhere. His mind is on Krishna. He does his duties as householder very nicely. But within his heart, he is always thinking about Krishna. So, for pure devotees, there are different types of renunciation. A pure devotee, he can even enjoy sense objects. Just like in the household or ashram, then there is sexual enjoyment. A pure devotee can actually engage in sexual enjoyment and not be compromised in his position as pure devotee. This type of renunciation is called amana. It means the senses are engaged in enjoyment, but in the heart, the devotee is completely detached from it. Another kind of renunciation seen among pure devotees is called vyatireka, which means he's just engaging his senses and their objects out of duty. Otherwise, he has no attachment for them. Another kind of renunciation is called indriya. That means the pure devotee, he actually has not even any attraction, any interest in sense objects, but due to his circumstance, due to his circumstance in life, his senses are nonetheless engaged in sense objects. And then there's, finally, Vishaya Haranam. This means that the senses are actually completely withdrawn from sense objects.
říkáme Vishara Haranam, znamená, že smysly jsou úplně odpoutané a odtažené od všech předmětů.
Like if a pure devotee is acting as a sannyasi, then his senses are kept completely withdrawn from contact with any type of enjoyment. So all of these stages, all of these different ways of renunciation are actually considered equal. Because in any of these cases, the consciousness of the devotee is not being affected by material nature. It's only when there's the influence of the modes of nature that we see that there is attraction and attachment to sense objects. And for neophyte devotees, that attraction and attachment, it usually begins in the mode of goodness. Because at the neophyte stage, when we take up Krishna consciousness, we are first becoming situated in the material mode of goodness. And then from there we are trying to develop Krishna consciousness. So in the material, in this mode of goodness, there is the danger of becoming captivated by attraction to a woman. Especially by appreciating the woman's devotional qualities. You see, in the Krishna consciousness movement, there are men and women engaged in serving Krishna. Now, as described here, Sri Krishna, he is full unto himself. He is Atmarama. He is the enjoyer of his own spiritual nature. He is not attracted by womanly beauty because he is the origin of womanly beauty. Prabhupada gives the example of the confectioner, of the sweet maker. He's making so many sweets every day. He himself has no particular attraction or attachment to sweets. And this is illustrated here. When Indra wanted to arrange for the seduction of Naranarayan Rishi, this is described later on in Srimad Bhagavatam in greater detail. So Indra sent Kamadeva, the god of lust. And he sent spring personified. And also he sent greed personified. As well as many beautiful apsaras, the heavenly dancing girls. And they came to the ashram of Naranarayana Rishi. And spring made the whole atmosphere transform to become just like spring. So suddenly all the trees they burst out in flowers, and there was a sweet smell in the air, and there were warm breezes. blowing here and there. And the beautiful girls started dancing and singing. And Cupid started shooting his arrows. So Narayan Rishi, he simply manifested from his form so many, many beautiful ladies. They were thousands and millions of times more beautiful than these heavenly girls. So the heavenly girls and Cupid and so on, they all became embarrassed. So they surrendered to Naranarayan Rishi. So Naranarayan Rishi was displaying his own internal potency. Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan, he's enjoying his own internal potency in the form of the most beautiful females. But these females are completely transcendental. Indeed, they are simply his own pleasure potency. Once Srimati Radharani was having a discussion with a great sage, Durvasa Muni. So she was speaking with Durvasa about Krishna. And Durvasa Muni told her that Krishna is the topmost brahmachari. So Srimati Radharani became a little surprised. And she asked, how can Krishna be a brahmachari? Because after all, she is Krishna's girlfriend. And Krishna is always enjoying loving pastimes, conjugal affairs with Srimati Radharani and the gopis. So she couldn't, not that she couldn't understand, but for our understanding, she asked this question, how is it that Krishna is a brahmachari? And Durvasa Muni answered that you are simply Krishna's own internal spiritual pleasure potency. He's not enjoying anything other than himself by enjoying with you. So, anyway, my original point is that in this Krishna consciousness movement, we see young men, young women engaged together in serving Krishna. And so Krishna is accepting the service. This is what Krishna enjoys. Because the devotional service is actually the bhakti shakti, is actually the Lord's own internal potency. So becoming Krishna's devotee means that we're actually surrendering to Krishna's internal potency. And by surrendering to that potency, then our activities become acceptable to Krishna. And Krishna is not concerned with the external form of these bodies, whether it's male or female. You see, that's our problem. It's not Krishna's problem. Krishna is accepting our devotion, whether we're in a man's body or a woman's body. But due to Maya, in this world, there is some attraction between the sexes. Which, as I said, this arises from our conditioning in the modes of nature. So in the mode of goodness, we may become drawn, I'm talking, when I say we, I mean us men, us who are in men bodies, male bodies, we may start to appreciate the service of some young brahmacharini. We may think, oh, she's a nice devotee. Just see how humble she is. How she's always staying engaged in Krishna's service. I find this very nice. I want to have her association. Now actually, what is happening here? This is not bhakti shakti. The bhakti shakti is for Krishna. This, what is happening, is the maya shakti. Because subtly, the poor young fellow is being drawn into thinking that I am the Lord. I should be the recipient of this young girl's service. You see, the subtle conditioning of the female nature is called prakriti bhava. Prakriti bhava means prakriti means nature. So this nature, this material nature, or maya, it is the servant of Krishna. So it is a woman's nature to render service. Women are, that's why Prabhupada actually explained in one conversation, all women are automatically placed in the Shudra category. Because Shudra means servant class. Even the wife of a Brahmana is considered a Shudra. Now I want to underline this fact that I'm quoting Srila Prabhupada. So no one can object that this Swami is making some radical statements that are prejudicial against women. I'm just quoting Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, he said in India, strict brahmanas, they will not eat the food cooked by their wives. Rather, it's the brahmana, the husband, who is the cook for the family. Why is that? Because the wife is a shudra. And a brahmana, a strict brahmana, will not eat the food cooked by a shudra. So the husband, he cooks for the whole family. And he offers it to Krishna, and wife and children, everybody takes it as prasad. So anyway, my point is that women are automatically in this, by their material nature, in this category of being servant. So they can serve Krishna, or they can serve Maya, they can serve their husbands. It is simply their manifest nature to serve. It's a woman's nature to keep busy cleaning the house, taking care of children. So when some brahmachari starts to appreciate, oh, this woman is very nice, she always keeps so busy, always serving, he's just appreciating this prakriti bhava. The service, if she's serving Krishna, only Krishna can accept that service. You understand this point? The devotional service of the woman is meant for Krishna. And if we start, as men, start to think, oh, she's very nice serving Krishna, I like this, that means we're just being attracted by prakriti bhava. And when a man is attracted by this prakriti bhava, then what happens? His own, what is called purusha bhava, becomes agitated. Purusha bhava means this is the symptom of male conditioning, conditioning in the male body, to think that I am the enjoyer. So he starts to think, I should enjoy this woman's nice service. So that relationship is asat, it is unreal. Therefore, this relationship between man and woman is called asat sangha, it's unreal association. So, now, previously I was talking about pure devotees situated in the household or ashram. Who are free of the tinge of the modes of nature. So if they're pure devotees, then actually there is none of this agitation of prakriti bhava, purusha bhava, like this. Both are simply serving Krishna, but side by side. And even there may be sexual relationships between the two for producing children. But this is amana vairagya. This means, although the senses are engaged, there is no attachment. So Srila Prabhupada said, this is the art of household life, to live with Maya, but in such a way that there's no illusion. But actually one has to be very advanced for this. Sometimes we think that because I'm not advanced, then I should enter the household ashram. But if you're not advanced, then you place yourself, you expose yourself to this asat sangha. It is like the bringing together of the camel and the scorpion. There is a story of one scorpion was standing by the river bank. He wanted to cross the river, but of course could not. So a camel came by. The camel was going to cross the river. So the scorpion said to the camel, look, why don't you take me on your back? The camel has this big hump. So I'll get up there and sit on your back and you can carry me across the river. So the camel said, but look, you're a scorpion. If you get on my back, I'm afraid that you will sting me. And the scorpion said, oh, how could that be? Because I'm depending on you to cross the river. If I sting you and then you die, then we're both swept away by the waves. That means we both perish. So then the camel thought, all right, that sounds sensible. Okay. Then the camel knelt down. You can get on my back. So then the camel crossed the river, or got in the river, and then halfway in the middle of the river, suddenly the scorpion, ding, stung the camel. And the camel turned and said, oh, what did you do that for? Now we're both finished. And the scorpion said, it's my nature. So you see, this is the danger. This story is illustrating that association between man and woman. When we are still conditioned by material nature. Then with all good intentions, the man and woman may be brought together in household or life with the idea that we shall cross the river of material existence together. And we're both devotees. Why would we drag each other down and ruin our lives? But often it is seen. That's what happens. And it's the same reason. It's our nature. That's the material nature. Prakriti bhava and Purusha bhava, when they come together, then there is mutual destruction. So, therefore, we are told, you men, you brahmacharis are told, never trust a woman. This is not meant to be a slight against women. If the women are serving Krishna, then they're all right. Actually, Srila Prabhupada says that one of the recently published books from the BBT, is it Path to Perfection? Anyway, one of these new books I read, Srila Prabhupada writes that actually it is a preacher, Krishna consciousness. He wants to see all the beautiful women engaged in Krishna's service. He's not averse to preaching to women. He's not averse to bringing them into the Krishna consciousness movement. But the point is that only Krishna can accept their service. So we should never become attracted to the activities of women, thinking that they're very nice. As soon as the mind becomes attracted and then we start to think about women's qualities of service and start to talk about them like this, then we're being dragged away by the material energy. It is Maya's business to cheat us in this way. So one has to be very sober. Dhira is the word. One has to be very sober, very realistic about life to be, avoid being cheated. Therefore, we should strengthen our intelligence by always reading Prabhupada's books and absorbing his message. In this way, one will rise above romanticism and sentimentalism. It's by romanticism and sentimentalism that one becomes captivated by Maya. And then cheated in so many ways. It's like there's a story of one, of a king and a brahmana. The king and his brahmana minister. They used to often play dice together. So the king, whenever he would throw the dice, he would quote one statement. And the statement was, it's a kind of a rhyme. I don't know if you can translate it into Czech in the same way, but the statement was, given the opportunity, all women work iniquity. Which means, in simpler language, that when they have the chance, all women create trouble, difficulties for men. And because this statement is true, then the king would always win the dice game. This was his secret of winning dice. So the brahmana, he got tired of always losing. So he thought, I have to create an exception to this statement so that it won't be true. So the brahmana, he was very expert in reading signs. You know, that means he could understand things about the world by seeing specific signs. So one day he saw a poor woman who was pregnant. She was very soon to have her child. And he could understand by signs that this woman would have a female child. So then he said to this woman, look, I'll take you into my house and you can give birth to this child in my home. I'll take care that the birth is nice, and after you give birth to this child, I will give you a great deal of money. But I want your daughter. You give your baby daughter to me, and I will raise her. So the poor woman agreed. So this brahmana, he lived in a house of 7 floors high. And it had 7 walls around it. That means one had to pass through 7 gates to get in or out of his house. So he kept this young girl on the 7th floor of his house. And he had one old lady who was taking care of this woman. And actually he had arranged that all the servants in the house and even the guards at the gates, they were all women. And he was the only man who ever entered that house. So this little girl grew up and she only knew this Brahmin as the only man, and he became her husband. So she was never allowed to leave the house. In fact, she never ever saw another man. So she became very attached to this Brahmana. Her mind was fixed on him. And she was trained from her very birth to be chaste, to be truthful, to have all good qualities. So then, one day, that Brahmin, he asked to play dice with the king. So the king, when he was throwing the dice, he chanted his mantra again. Given opportunity, all women will work iniquity. And then the Brahmin said, except for my young wife. And when the dice were cast, the king lost. So the king was also very intelligent. And he could understand, oh, this Brahmana has somehow arranged to get a very chaste woman as his wife, and he must be protecting her very much. But if she's a woman, then there is a way to make her fall down. So then the king hired one playboy. And the king said, this Brahmana, he's keeping a very chaste woman as his wife. I want you to seduce her and make her break her vow of chastity to her husband. So on the street outside of the Brahmin's house, the playboy with his friends, he opened a flower selling shop and perfume shop. And he was always watching the Brahmin's house and seeing what was going on. So he saw the old lady, who is the personal attendant of the wife, the Brahmin's wife. She would come out every day and she would go to buy things on the street. So one day when she was passing in front of his shop, he came out on the street. And he came out, he was crying, and he ran up to this old lady and he said, Mother, Mother, I haven't seen you for so many years. And his friends, they also came out and they were saying, oh, look at this woman. She looks just like our friend's mother. This is amazing. And the playboy, he was very expert in acting. So he fell down at the old woman's feet. He was kissing her feet. Oh, mother, mother. And so the old lady, She was sentimental. And so her heart was moved by this nice young man falling at her feet, calling her mother. And since she was a lonely old lady anyway, she thought, well, what's the harm? He's not really my son, but if he thinks he's my son, then I should accept him as my son. So very respectfully, he brought her into his shop and he sat her down and he put a garland on her. And he was talking with her as a son talks to the mother. And then he asked her, why you out on the street? What are you doing? And she said, well, I'm shopping for things for my mistress, my lady who I serve. And so the playboy said, well, look, when you need to buy flowers or perfume, then you come here to my shop, I will give you everything free, because after all, you are my mother. So then every day, the old lady was coming to that shop and was sitting with her son, so-called son, and they were talking for many hours. So this old lady became very attached to this playboy as her son. And the old lady told all about her life to him and how she's serving this beautiful young wife of the Brahmin. And how this young girl is so pure and so devoted to her husband, so chaste. So one day she came to the flower shop and the friends of her son said, oh, your son is very sick. So they took her in the back and she saw her so-called son laying in bed. And she said, what's wrong? And he said, oh, mother, he said, I'm sick with love. You have told about this beautiful young wife of the Brahmin, and by hearing about her from you, I've fallen in love with her. And unless I can spend some time alone with her, I will surely die. So then the old lady, she became very alarmed and she said, don't worry, I'll arrange it. So then she went back and she began to speak to the young girl about her son, and she spoke in such a moving, sentimental way that the young girl thought, my servant lady's son is going to die for love of me, then surely I will have to help him. So the girl said, well, if you can bring him here to my room, then I will cure him of his sickness. Don't worry. So then the old lady, she got a big cart, a big wagon, and she went out and she told the female guards, now I have to buy a big load of flowers, so I'll be back. So the guard said, oh, all right. So she went to the flower shop, and the playboy got in the wagon. And then he was covered up with flowers. And she came back into the house with this wagon load of flowers, and the guards, they didn't check, they accepted. So then the flowers were brought up to the room of the girl on the seventh floor. And then inside the room, the old lady said, "Here's my son." And the playboy got out. So then, for many hours, the son, the playboy, and this chaste young girl, they were enjoying sense gratification. And then the girl said, "Look, now you have to leave because my husband is coming home." But the playboy said, "Well, before I leave, I want to hit him on the head." And then the girl said, "Yeah, I think we can arrange that. So you just hide in the closet." So the husband came home, and he was, and his wife was acting very devoted to him. "Oh, come in, sit down. I've been thinking of you all day." And then she said, "I have a desire that you play the flute, you play the bamboo flute, and I will dance to the music you make." So the Brahmana, being so much attached to his wife, he said, "Oh yes, this is very nice." And so he got a flute and he said, "Now I will play." But then the wife, this young girl, she began to act very bashful. Her face became a little red and she said, "But I'm ashamed to dance in front of you like this. So you have to wear a blindfold and then I will dance." So the husband, because he was completely overwhelmed with lust for this girl, he said, "Yes, yes, of course, all right, put a blindfold on me and I will play the flute." So then he was playing the flute and she was dancing around the room. And then she called her lover to come out of the closet. And then the lover came up behind the husband. And then she said, "Dear, I have a strong desire to just hit you once on the head." And her husband laughed and said, "Oh, my dear, you can hit me on the head if you like." So then the playboy, he pulled back his fist and wham! Hit this man right in the head as hard as he could. And then the husband, he said, "My dear, your hand is so soft, but you hit so hard." Then the playboy went back in the closet. And then the wife, she was laughing and she took the blindfold off and she was massaging her husband's head with oil. "It's all right, it's all right." He was, you know, he had a big bump on his head. And then he had to go lay down. So while he was laying down, then she arranged for the escape of the playboy. So then, when the Brahmin went to see the king the next day, they had another game of dice. The playboy had reported everything to the king. So the king threw the dice and chanted his mantra. And the brahmana said, except for my wife. But the king won the game. Then the brahmana knew. He said, she must have cheated on me. So he went back home and he accused his wife. You've been unfaithful. And then she became very indignant. How could you accuse me? And she started to cry. And then she said, I cannot live if I'm accused of unfaithfulness by my husband. So you make a fire and I'm going to put my hand into the fire. And if this hand has never touched another man, then it will not burn. And if I have touched another man with this hand, then it will burn. That will be the test of my chastity. So the husband, he was impressed by this. So he said, all right, we'll make a public display with fire and everything. We'll invite all the public and you can prove your chastity in front of everyone. So arrangements were made. And meanwhile, this wife, this girl, she sent a note to her lover with a secret plan. So a great crowd gathered and the fire was made and it was blazing up. And then the young girl, she stepped forward and with a quivering voice, she spoke out that if I have been true to my husband, then even though I place my hand in this fire, it will not burn. So just as she was going to put her hand in the fire, suddenly that playboy who had just been standing there in the crowd, no one knew who he was. He suddenly jumped up and he took her by the hand and pulled her hand away from the fire and said, what kind of madness is this? And then he started to chastise the Brahmin. You are a very cruel man. We can all see that your wife is pure and faithful. Why are you making her put on this savage display? This is uncivilized. How dare you force your wife to put her hand into fire? So the Brahmana was very angry and he pushed this young man away. And then he turned again to the girl and said, now, continue. And she said, well, I'm sorry. This young man came up and he touched my hand. So now my vow is broken. And then the husband, he said, well, all right. I guess I have to accept this. So in this way, she tricked him again. So anyway, this is a story that illustrates that when one succumbs to these sentimental notions, you see, and becomes devoted to his wife and thinks that his wife is devoted to him, then he becomes victimized by Maya. Mm-hmm. So I'll stop here. Any questions? Yes?
Somebody is above three modes of nature, and why is he taking this ashram and responsibilities? Does it depend on varna or of engagement in devotional service?
Yes, it is a matter of duty. Sometimes the spiritual master requests the disciple to get married, even though the disciple need not be married. Just like Maharaj Priyavrata, he was requested. You can read this in Bhagavatam. He was requested by his spiritual master, Lord Brahma, to accept a wife and produce progeny. So, a pure devotee can, without attachment, fulfill all the duties of Varna Ashram Dharma for the good of human society. Krishna himself declares in Bhagavad Gita that when he descends to set the example of dharma, of proper human life. And that means that Krishna also, he accepts 16,108 wives and takes care of them properly. Not that he needs to do this, but he's setting example for others. So a pure devotee will do the same. Any other questions? Yes?
Service every day, what influence does it have on his development? Devotees are not, they don't have a permanent service, they change from Sankirtan to work on farm.
Well, I think the real question is, why are they changing? If one is being assigned different services by authority, then there's no problem in that.
Mm-hmm.
Because one is simply doing one's duty. But if one is changing because of one's own desires or one's own unsteadiness, then this is problematic. Because the point is that advancement means to become a steadily situated in devotional service. That doesn't have to mean only one kind of service, but it means wherever one is situated, in whatever kind of service, His mind is peaceful. He's simply engaged in serving Krishna. But if we are influenced by material desires, then we will feel some distress. And we will think, oh, now I have to change this service and do something else because of too much agitation or whatever. But you should know that the agitation is arising not from the service, but from the mind. So you may change your service, but you don't change your mind. So you take new service, but there will still be agitation. So as I was saying the other day, the only solution is one has to push beyond the barrier of the mind. Get off the mental plane. Anything else? Yeah? Well, accepting a spiritual master is even more important decision than accepting a wife. And usually when it comes to choosing a wife or a husband, one thinks about it very carefully. So how much more we should think carefully about choosing a spiritual master. So there's no fault in taking one's time to make this choice. Mm-hmm. But it is also a fact that without a spiritual master to guide us, then our progress in devotional service will become checked, will become hindered at some point or other. All of us have in our hearts unwanted desires, material contamination. And we need the help of a guide to get over these obstructions. If we act on our own initiative, make our own decisions, make our own plan of how to advance, then this will be contaminated by our hidden material desires. But as long as we stay, at least as long as we stay under the shelter of ISKCON, then this is the safe position. At least one stays free of Maya. Mm-hmm. At least one is saved from the fire of material existence. Mm-hmm. So one should remain within the shelter of ISKCON and then make one's decision for accepting spiritual master. Anything else? Yes? Umanchit?
Accepting spiritual authority, even though it's not the spiritual master. What are references of Srila Prabhupada? What did he say? Connection.
Yeah. Well, Srila Prabhupada is the Param Guru.
Srila Prabhupada, Param Guru.
Of everyone. He's the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So, by taking shelter of ISKCON, we are taking shelter of Srila Prabhupada's instructions. And Srila Prabhupada's instructions are manifest in ISKCON in the form of the authority structure. There is GBC, there is temple president, there are officers in the temple. There's Sankirtan leader and so on. So all of this is according to Prabhupada's instructions. So as I said, we may not yet have spiritual master. But in ISKCON, we should follow Prabhupada's instructions. Then we will at least, we will have shelter from the fire of the material energy. So following Srila Prabhupada's instructions means to follow the authority of temple president, temple commander, Sankirtan leader, and so on up to GBC. If we don't follow, if we become independent of this authority structure, then you're becoming independent of Prabhupada's instructions. And then we expose ourselves to the influence of the material energy. Lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, envy.
Sometimes it goes better, sometimes it goes worse. Is it a sign also of problems with spiritual progress?
Yes, certainly. But the chanting is our means to overcome our spiritual difficulties. So whether we have taste or not, we should chant as a simply as a regulative principle. Sixteen rounds a day. By becoming steady in this, then gradually we will get strength to overcome all of our problems. But this again, you see, this is showing why we need to have a spiritual master. Because when we have problem in our sadhana, chanting Hare Krishna, then we need to turn to someone in whom we have faith, who is setting the example that we should follow, and get help from him. If we only associate with other persons like ourselves, who also have problems in chanting their japa, then from where will we get the inspiration to to advance? Should pray to Krishna. Guru Krishna Prasade Bhaya Bhakti Lata Bij. It is by the mercy of Krishna that one gets Guru. And by the mercy of Guru, we get Krishna. So if you're sincere, if you're really serious about making spiritual advancement, then Krishna will send you proper spiritual master. So in that sincere mood, if you have that sincerity, yes, you can go to authorities and speak with them that you're very desirous of finding spiritual master, and they can help you. But the thing is that you have to really want this. Then Krishna will reciprocate. If you don't really want it, if you don't really want to give up your independence and actually become a disciple, but out of some secondary considerations like well, I want to be an initiated devotee so that others will respect me and not get on my case so much. And if it's that sort of the motivation, then you may be cheated. You had a question, Mariji?
And our desire can influence our becoming a devotee.
Well, the desire to become a devotee is something that one receives by association. And this can take many lifetimes. It begins by some chance association with a pure devotee or some chance contact with devotional service. Agyata Sukriti, it's called. Unknowing pious activity. Perhaps once in some previous lifetime, once in a whole life of sense gratification by accident. And the karmis have no idea of the deeper meaning of these activities. But if they hear the holy name, if they eat one sweet ball, if they buy one book, their good fortune is being created. So they may have otherwise no desire to become Krishna conscious, but by engaging in these activities, even without knowing what they mean, that desire will be generated within the heart by the mercy of Paramatma. Yes?
Said that Sankirtan devotees were distributing books, they're going out to distribute causeless mercy, it said. But also it must be a caused mercy, because Krishna caused the whole situation that a person takes a book, that a devotee goes out. So caused or causeless?
Well, our philosophy is not impersonal. So causeless mercy does not mean coming out of the void. The word cause, hetu, in Sanskrit, it's used in the sense of material cause. So causeless mercy means that it is mercy that is not dependent upon karma. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu distributed his mercy to anyone and everyone, not considering their occasions. Whether they were high class or low class, Brahmana or Malecha, everyone he gave equally the holy name. And everyone who took the holy name received equally the same result, Krishna Prema. So that is the meaning of causeless. Any other questions? Yes.
Show of Mayapur by devotees who went there in the spring. And so this question is about the self-manifested Nisimadev deity which is there. Whether you know some details or can you say anything more about it? How?
You mean in Nisringapali? Which is that the deity he's speaking of? Nisringapala? Well, Lord Nisringadeva, after killing Hiranyakashipu and instructing Prahlad Maharaj, he stopped there at that place in Nisringapali. And that deity is self-manifested because devotees, they desired to worship Lord Nisringadeva. But Lord Nisringadeva wanted to, you see, he wanted to return to the spiritual world.